It's The Current's Music News, the daily podcast where we tell you what you need to know about what's going on in the music world. Today is Monday, January 14th. I'm Jay Gabler, and I was hanging out with my nieces and nephew this weekend, and I asked them, hey, do you know this song, Baby Shark? And they start saying, doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo, Baby Shark, doo-doo-doo-doo-doo.
Jay, it's everywhere.
Everybody but us knew about it, Jade.
Oh, well, I'm glad we finally got on it. If you need that episode again, that was last Thursday's episode. I'm Jade, by the way. And you know what? We're just going to keep the joyful experiences coming today with some news about the first female rapper being inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame.
And nominations for this year's Brit Awards. But first, a few more of today's headlines. Well, having recently celebrated their 50th anniversary as a band, The Who are moving on. No, that doesn't mean they're breaking up. It means that's the name of their upcoming tour, which will also feature symphonic accompaniment, because why not? Pete Townsend and Roger Daltrey will also collaborate on a new studio album, their first in 13 years, and the band's 12th overall.
That's kind of nice to see him going back into the studio after so many years.
Yeah, you know, the band's North American tour kicks off on May 7th in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Continues for several months. Won't wrap up until the end of October. They're playing a lot of dates, but they're not trying to kill themselves here. It's like, you know, give yourself a few days between dates. Roger Daltrey said in a statement, "Be aware, Who fans. Just because it's The Who with an orchestra, in no way will it compromise the way Pete and I deliver our music. This will be full throttle Who with horns and bells on."
Full throttle.
Someone better tell the horns and the bells. Well, with every year comes another prediction that the retro fad for vinyl is a bubble that's going to burst. And then comes another sales report that vinyl sales have gone up.
And this is kind of interesting because a lot of the vinyl that they've been selling, you know, the big number one and two, sound like albums to me that people already bought on vinyl. But maybe it's the vinyl that you bought and then you got rid of when you wanted to buy the CD version of it. And now you have to buy it back. I don't know, Jay.
That must be it, because yeah, these are albums that were huge sellers back in the original LP day, and then baby boomers all replaced their album collection with compact discs, and now someone, baby boomers, millennials, Gen Xers, a lot of people are buying albums by artists like The Beatles, Pink Floyd, David Bowie. All those artists are topping the vinyl sales chart, which is going up and up and up. Last year, vinyl sales went up by 15%, which made 2017 the 13th year in a row that vinyl sales have increased.
Wow, it's 1977 all over again.
Yeah. CD and digital download sales continue to plummet, so vinyl is becoming an ever larger part of the album sales market overall. But like we talked about on the podcast last year, you can't count CDs out just yet. Vinyl albums are still just one in five physical albums that are sold these days. Puerto Rican music star Kevin Frett, who called himself the first openly gay Latin trap artist, died of a gunshot wound on Thursday at age 25.
And this is really sad and heartbreaking because not only was he the first out and really becoming a household name, not only in Puerto Rico, but kind of crossing over into the United States.
Yeah, very, very sad situation. He was shot twice while riding his motorcycle in San Juan. The identity and motive of the shooter remain unknown. And his death came coincidentally just the day before the world's eyes turned to San Juan, as Lin-Manuel Miranda opened a limited run of Hamilton, returning to the title role of that musical for what he hopes will call attention to both the needs and the attractions of Puerto Rico. Kevin Frett prided himself on being a model for fellow queer people from Latin cultures, working in a genre often known for macho heteronormative boasting. In a recent interview, he talked about young gay guys or young lesbians that are looking at me now like a role model. In a recent interview, he said, "Young gay guys or young lesbians that are looking at me now like a role model, like, wow, if he did it, and he don't care what anybody else has to say, I could do it." Here's Kevin Frett's song, Soy Así, in which he sings about being the reincarnation of Frida Kahlo.
Back in November, the Songwriters Hall of Fame announced the nominees for the 2019 class, which they break into two categories, performing and non-performing. So the performing songwriters included Chrissy Hynde of The Pretenders, Tommy James of the Shondells fame, Annie Lennox and Dave Stewart of The Eurythmics, Mike Love of The Beach Boys, Jeff Lynne of Electric Light Orchestra, Lloyd Price, Vince Gill, John Prine, who sadly missed out on getting into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame earlier this year, Cat Stevens, and Missy Elliott. And then in the non-performers area, it was a number of artists, including a couple who actually got in. So they had 24 performers. Only 6 actually made it in. The votes have been counted, and congratulations going out to Dallas Austin, who is a producer and songwriter and singer, who's worked with Aretha Franklin, Michael Jackson, Madonna, Bjork, Gwen Stefani. He actually wrote the hit Creep for TLC and Boyz II Men's Motown Philly. Tom T. Hall, he's written 12 number one hit songs with 26 more that reached the top 10, including the number one international pop crossover smash Harper Valley PTA. And there's Jack Temchin, who's probably best known for writing the Eagles' hit Peaceful Easy Feeling, and he co-wrote a bunch of their other songs. And of course, there's also John Prine, who made it in, 2-time Grammy winner, one of Jay's favorites, and also Yusuf, or Cat Stevens, who responded to his induction by saying, "Music has brought so many things together. It's a wonderful way to spread unity and peace." But the biggest thing for me, my biggest takeaway here, is the induction of Missy Elliott. That is amazing. Yeah, she's the first female rapper ever inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame, and she's one of only 3 rappers in the entire membership. There's a little over 400 members, so that's a big deal. Jay-Z is one of the only others, and Jermaine Dupri got in last year. So this is huge, Jay.
Yeah, it's great to see Missy Elliott's creativity being recognized. She's been so inspirational for so long. Missy Elliott jams will still fill the floor at any party you're at.
Yeah, and if you're wondering why was she included, if you're at all scratching your head, let me clue you in on the 20-odd year vet of the industry. She's done more for women in hip-hop than anyone else. She's been the secret weapon for people like Beyonce, Whitney Houston, Aaliyah, and Janet Jackson. She's been working behind the scenes writing and producing their music, and also picking up 5 Grammy Awards. All 6 of her albums have been platinum or better, and it should be noted that she's the only female rapper to achieve that level of success. So congratulations to all the new inductees, but especially Miss Misdemeanor Elliott, who has proved that she can work it. Is it worth it? Let me work it. I put my thing down, flip it and reverse it. It's your primitive, it's wet and yet. It's your primitive, it's wet and yet. If you got a big... The Brit Awards might not seem like such a big deal if you're not a Brit, but they're huge in the UK, and with live streaming reaching around the world, they become a must-watch spectacle for a lot of music fans. This year's nominees have just been announced, and it can be a little bit hard to tell what the big headline is with the Brit Award nominees, because the categories are so segmented. There's male solo artist versus female solo artist versus group, and then those are broken down by British versus international artists. And the international categories are always kind of a weird grab bag. It's like when you look at the British charts, you're like, okay. Who?
Yeah. So, like, this year's nominees include North American superstars like Drake and Ariana Grande, and then indie European favorites like First Aid Kit and Christine and the Queens. But with the Brits, probably the real awards to pay attention to are those prizes for British artists. And 2 big names really stand out among this year's British nominees for the Brit Awards. First, if you needed confirmation that Dua Lipa is on the rise as one of the world's leading pop stars, here it is. This is the artist who won both British Breakthrough Act and British Female Solo Act last year, and now this year again, she's tied for the most nominations with 4.
That's really interesting because she doesn't get much love here in the U.S.
Yeah, definitely one of those pop stars that's huge in the U.K. and certainly has plenty of fans here in the U.S., but doesn't have that kind of household name status she does in the U.K.
Or that critical appreciation, I guess.
Yeah. So this year, she's nominated 2 in the Best British Single category for her solo track, IDGAF. I'll let you spell out for yourself what that stands for. And for her Calvin Harris collaboration, One Kiss. The other artist tied for this year's most Brit nominations is Anne Marie. She's nominated for Best British Female Solo Artist, Best British Single, Best Video for her throwback song 2002, as well as Album of the Year for Speak Your Mind. And if you don't know a lot about Dua Lipa and you're American, you probably don't really know anything about Anne Marie.
This is actually the first time I've heard her name, and I consider myself somebody who knows a little bit about music. So thank you, Jay.
That's the great thing about music. You can literally have a full-time job as a DJ, and you can't know everyone. Well, Anne Marie is actually no stranger to the UK charts, where she's been landing hit singles for half a decade. But this was her breakout year. She finally released a debut full-length album to great success. Here's that song, 2002.
Yeah. Dancing on the hood in the middle of the woods of an old Mustang, where we sang songs with all our childhood friends. And it went like this, say, oops, I got 99 problems singing bye, bye, bye. Hold up, if you want.
Well, welcome to Schadenfreude season. This week alone, you're going to have not one, but two documentaries about the famously failed Fyre Festival to warm your cynical soul.
And what's sad about this is it was the festival that literally everyone who got there immediately wanted to forget.
Yeah, no, we're never going to be able to now. Well, especially not entrepreneur Billy McFarlane, the main force behind the festival. He's now behind bars, serving a prison term for fraud related to the festival. And what's the deal with this whole Fyre Festival? How did it get to be such a production? How do people get bilked out of so much money? Well, the story is being told in a couple of documentaries. There's going to be the Netflix documentary coming out on Friday. Netflix has been beating the drums for this documentary for months. I've already been invited to watching parties. People have been so excited to watch this Netflix documentary. And then Hulu today is just like, oh, boomp. We have one too. There, it's out. You can watch it first. So this leads to my question. Just like the Fyre Festival itself was super disappointing for people who showed up down there with such high expectations, don't these documentaries also have to be super disappointing?
Yeah, it just like slowly ends. It just fades out at the end and you leave going, huh, I really expected more.
Every trailer, and there's a trailer out now for the Hulu documentary, every trailer, every teaser, everything you ever see anyone say about this Fyre Festival disaster has that same photo of that one sad sandwich in a styrofoam container. It's like a piece of bread, maybe a lettuce, maybe there's a cheese in there. It's like, yeah, that looks like a terrible sandwich. I'll bet if you went down looking for a deluxe experience and this is what they gave you, you'd be really sad about it. But why is there just that one photo I keep seeing? How much documentation is there really? How much of a story is there really to tell? Well, we're really going to find out now.
We're about to go to Fyre Festival.
Could be amazing. Could be a disaster.
And those are today's stories. You can see that teaser for the new Hulu documentary and read more about all these stories over at thecurrent.org. I'm Jay Gabler.
And I'm Jade.
Jade is also our producer today. Wherever you're listening to us, please give us a rating, give us a review, tell your friends. We're always looking for more friends. Then again, who isn't? We'll be back tomorrow with more headlines.